What's up? How's it going, everybody? We're back once again. It is Friday, after all. We're trying to be a little more consistent post-holidays with the release of these shows. Welcome to episode 9 of Voyager Food and Wine Cast. I am your host, Jordy. I am in the Rolling Stones mobile studio today. I transported myself to this magical realm filled with delicious food and wine and cute pups and big plants. I'm at the residence of chefs Lisa Kirkpatrick and Paul Zirkle. Thank you for having me in your home, Lisa.
Oh, thanks for being here. This is great.
It's gonna be even greater once we start drinking this wine. So episode 9. Again, if any of you out there tuned in to our last episode, this was supposed to be episode 8, and again, I am I'm not like a super like nerd squad tech dude, and I don't know how some of this computer stuff works sometimes, and I think I messed up when I was recording Lisa a few weeks ago now. So we're going to do this again. It's not going to be exactly like a repeat of the show we did. Even if we could, I don't know how fun that would be because we already talked about stuff. But if in the future I can figure out how to access some of those files or fix it, I'd be happy to release that conversation. It was pretty in depth, and you know, we'll try to get in there a little bit and figure it out. So I haven't really been out to dinner in Milwaukee in a while. Usually, you know, if I'm on a trip to Chicago, it's usually Chicago. We'll go out and we'll get some food or whatever. But like when I'm home, I'm like at work and I'm doing stuff, and it's just so hard to be like, yeah, let's, you know, get a babysitter and go out and eat dinner. You know, it's just so many moving parts. But last night I actually just kind of had a magic window and made it into Good Kind, where Lisa is the chef. And dude, it was so good.
Oh, thanks.
Like I've eaten at Good Kind so much over the years. And I just, man, like everything that I tried from the menu last night, and we were sharing stuff with people, and some people were sharing better than others, I'll say that. DVR was very very, very stingy with the cheeks, I'll say.
He was focused.
He was very focused on those cheeks, as he usually is. Any kind of cheek. I did order some of those to take home, and I had some of them for lunch today, and they were really good. But the food last night, I just felt like everything was just, like, hitting. It was so, like, it was Monday. The restaurant was, like, popping off. The bar was full.
It was such good energy. It was amazing. So many good people in there. Just like,
I felt like I was like, on like a show. Like, yeah. It just felt like that was the right level of din, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it was just cool. Lisa's like coming out to the tables, like table touching, talking to people. It was really cool. I had the tikka masala fish dish last night. What was that, kompachi?
Yep, it was Hawaiian kompachi. That was completely inspired from, there's a book out called Take One Fish out of Australia, and they like are all about being sustainable with fish, and fish sustainability is a huge thing to begin with, but then it's also like using the whole fish, and they have recipes for like fish fat caramel, and you know, they just kind of play with it. And we've been wanting to get fish on the rotisserie, and so these are just inspirations for projects. I ended up grilling it, but either way, it was just like treating it.
Like, I loved that smoke
on
it. Like, it just, I think I don't know. It just, to me, almost had a sense of like, plus like in the rap too, it just kind of, that smokiness almost made me feel like it was like this like tandoori oven kind of fish scenario.
Oh, for sure.
And it was like perfectly like right to that point where you're like, yeah, this is like sensorily, like taste wise, there's so many layers of flavors in here. Like, I don't know. I'm like, I'm just, every bite I take is a little different. And like, I don't know. It was really cool. It was a really wonderful fish dish to have on a chilly night here.
And it kind of sang a little like tuned, you know, like nod towards summer with that grill flavor and some of the like, but then also had kale and apple on it. And like, we were real cozy last night.
Yeah. Yeah. The cozy vibes. The cozy vibes were in full effect for sure. I also, the Spanish hangover soup.
Oh yeah.
I was able to dip some bread into the broth when the bowl had been discarded. And I'm not above, you know, I'm not above it. I was a server once and I know what to do. That broth was again, like, smoky, like paprika, warming.
Yeah. Paul had some like dried porcini, so it had a lot of depth. You know?
Yeah.
But I don't know if anyone figured it out, but it was also vegan. Like,
what?
Didn't ring like that either.
Oh my God. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I think I like it even more now, and I'm not even vegan. I assumed that there was like chorizo in there or something.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
It like reminded me a lot of like those like kind of Rioja soups with like big potato chunks and chorizo chunks and stuff, and just like
beans, whatever.
Soup. Yeah, yeah, like super hearty, rustic. What else did we have? Oysters were great. Dude, I don't know. I was also a little not sober when I was there, so that might have played
like,
a role.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I think you had the mushroom, the champagne batter mushrooms.
Yep. Classic.
Yeah.
I just, that's like just savory candy, man.
Yeah.
I just want, I could eat that every day.
Oh, and the latkes.
The latkes!
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. Also, a humble food, but like when you need it, when you want that, like that little hug, I mean, come on, just get after it. There's like a little egg salad going on there.
Yep.
I arrived starving. I had probably drank wine in anticipation of dinner.
Right.
Which hasn't happened to me in a while. But yeah, I was ready to go. I was like, everybody, let's get something different. Let's, you know? it was really great. It was a well-deserved meal. And yeah, you're right. Just the whole vibe in there was great. I don't know how long you guys are going to have that stuff on the menu, but you know, this episode will be out on Friday. So
we're planning on rocking a few of those dishes again next weekend. Just keep you know, the pork cheek has just been, it's just kind of, it's real comforting but also like really interesting, and people, I don't know, it's just cozy times, and I think it's really where we kind of are a strong point.
Yeah.
But also that fish is just, people need, dude, that we have,
yeah,
to, we have to do a few more days.
I honestly, like, lately, and by lately I think maybe the past like 6 years, because I'm getting old now, but like, whenever I order Indian food, usually from like a place like Cafe India close by in my neighborhood, but like, I always get Madras fish curry.
Oh,
like,
nice.
I love the kind of like juxtaposition of big, like intense warming flavors and those spices,
yeah,
with like the delicate texture of the fish.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the fish kind of like, to me, had like fits in somewhere like between the sauce and the naan in like, you know, density and texture.
Right.
And I just kind of love that, like, just that softness and the silkiness and the spiciness. I don't know. It's a thing that I'm trying to expand into. I've also been like trying to eat like all the tendons out of my phone, stuff like that. When I do that, I don't know. It's probably good for you. I think you need that stuff.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely. it's more sustainable for, you know, us consuming proteins. You know, to have a variety and also use all of it.
Yeah, hell yeah. So yeah, if you guys are out there listening to this on release, get your butts over to Good Kind this weekend. I mean, anytime really, but I don't know. You guys don't slouch, but man, yesterday was I just felt like it was just jamming in there in like the best way.
Yeah, and I feel like some of that has been a very interesting part of, you know, getting through this pandemic times in a business that isn't pandemic friendly. But, you know, having people in the space and having that warm, cozy feeling and having that energy, it feeds us to be able to, like, get through.
I'm glad I'm not the only person that felt that because I was like, maybe I was just having too good. Maybe I was imbibing too much. But I feel like it was palpable.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and I think we've been embracing, like, that we're just this small space and, like, we really love what we do. And we are super lucky right now. Our staff is amazing. And they're just fucking killing it. And just like, you know, all of us are being able to just like bring what we have to the table without feeling like stressed or competitive about it. It's just like really passionate about this is what we do. And at least we get to share it right now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's definitely, definitely on display. The bartenders were just great, super engaging, really funny. I was laughing like the whole time. It was a riot. It was great. I think part of that is too, you guys have always had, just a really great, well-rounded staff there. And in the kitchen, you guys have had some, just like big kind of up and coming, like little rock star people, like doing their thing in there. And I think, like, you know, and from talking with both of you from time to time, I think you guys give a lot of latitude to your people back there to kind of bring to the table what they are really good at. And seems to be like a climate of like, you know, we can all learn a little bit from each other if we spend the time to, you know, pay attention and you know, work together,
right?
You know, I mean, over the years, I mean, just the people that you've had, you know, doing kitchen stuff with Paul have gone on to start their own businesses. They've gone on to be chefs at other restaurants. And I think that's really cool to see. It's like you guys are like a little nursery for for good chefs, you know. And I don't know if there is a higher compliment, maybe as a boss or as a chef or as you know, I mean, an artist or whatever. I think that it's like it says something about the way you two run your place.
Yeah,
you know, for sure.
Well, and it's a space that we, you know, you spend a lot of time in it and in it together. And, you know, we like what we're doing. So it's just like being able to uplift other people liking that whole thing, either with us or on their own, has been really cool.
Yeah.
It's a really nice, like, and I learn a lot, you know, about life. About cooking, about people, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just like, you know, at this point, they refer to us as mom and dad, which we never had children, and we have a dog. And like, I was like, well, I mean, you are you could be my child, but yeah, we didn't go through all those other layers together.
Get out there and mow the lawn, damn it. I know, in one way or another, you kind of have that vibe. You know, I think that the people that I know that have spent a lot of time with both of you in the kitchen and in front of house there, just have this really great, like, affection, you know, like when they talk about working with you, it's like, oh yeah, you know, that was great. I would have never left unless I would have, you know, gone to school, you know, whatever. I think that's a mark of a great sort of like guiding principle that you guys kind of have there. I met you guys, I keep saying you guys, I'm sorry. I'm so not with the, I first met you two when, I worked at Hinterland as a server, and, I didn't know anything about Roots or anything. I knew that you two were like everyone else knew you. So I knew that you were probably like, you know, you had done something or other things in the past that were cool. and I just remember, you know, like being there on like a weekend, and it's like cutthroat to be a server sometimes. Cause like there was one computer in the kitchen to ring in your stuff.
Oh yeah.
And it was like, you would get stacked up behind like four people. And my serving style and, like, I don't know, I guess I was reading a lot more books back then and I could probably memorize things better, but I would take a couple tables orders in my head and go ring it in. But then, you know, you'd roll back into the kitchen and there's like four servers in front of you typing in substitutions and add-ons firing certain things and holding other things. And I just remember like that job was kind of stressful for me at a couple points, because I had gone to work there in kind of like a fine-ish dining atmosphere, and I had only like bartended at Blackbird and the Cactus Club and Palomino. That was my like front of house experience essentially. And then I'm like trying to figure out how to work a computer system to do it, you know, and it's just like, I remember being so flustered, and just like, you were working on the cold side, and it was just like, the guys on the hot side were like, you know, swearing at each other and like swearing at everyone, being all pissed off. And like Lisa's side was just like, hey, what's going on? How's the night going out there? You know,
yeah.
Is table 20 ready for dessert yet? You know? And it was just like the calm. It was the calm side. And at one point, like, I just remember, like if a piece of meat came off the grill at the wrong temp, it was like, give it to Lisa to bring over to the hot side to talk to them, because they won't yell at her and she won't take it either. So that was my first kind of introduction to you and Paul as the calm in the storm.
Oh right. I feel like sometimes people, I'm methodical about it, how I go about things, and they're almost like, is she going to be able to pull this off? And then they're like, oh, she's in control. She's just not frantic.
Yeah.
I mean, I can be sometimes.
So. Sure. Yeah.
More like that's pre-service when you're like,
yeah. Once service is going, it's like, well, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. I remember you saying a couple things to me that stuck with me. One time I rolled in pre-shift. I like to get there early. I like to have more time to set up and do my stuff or whatever. And also there was like sometimes like food sitting out, like the little cake ends or the, like, you know, someone would make a big salad or whatever. And one day there was like this whole box of like bakery and pastries and stuff, and I grabbed a piece of brioche and I just started like slathering this butter on it, and you like looked over from the cold side and you were like, are you putting fucking butter on that brioche? And I was like, yeah. And you're just like, you know, I think we're going to be friends. I was like, yeah, you know, sometimes you have to just take the morsel in life and just, you know, enjoy it to its fullest.
Oh, absolutely.
And I respected that. I was like, oh man, I hope no one notices me doing this. oops. But you also said something really important, probably not on that same day, but at some point in that sort of time period. And it was something to the effect of like, I think maybe I had asked you about, you know, how you're able to be so chill and just like, you know, kind of any problem that rolls your way on the line, it's kind of just like water off of a duck's ass. And it was like, how do you do that? Like, how are you just like so chilled out all the time? And you said something to the effect of like, you know, like if you cook food with like anger and like hate in your heart, the food isn't going to be good.
Right.
And I just, you know, at the time it was like, oh, that's a really great quote, Lisa. That's awesome. You know, but the more I've thought about that over the years, the more it just becomes a simple kind of truth. And I notice it in my, my approach to things, like work or like creative stuff. It's really like you have to literally set your mind to like be in a certain place and like kind of, I don't want to say like vibing at a certain frequency, man, but maybe maybe you've been listening to Shoeless's Chong and Jazz too long in here, but like I just, you know, like I have to be in a place, like if I'm gonna do something like that, I like sometimes I have to get there on purpose. Like I have to really like be like, okay, like what are my intentions with this thing that I'm doing? And yeah, like if I'm trying to make pottery and I'm like, you know, angry about something, most of it's going to come out looking like shit.
Yeah.
And any sort of creative pursuit is kind of like that, I think. And, cooking especially, I mean, it's like, I don't know, cooking, like being a chef is like being a painter, but you can eat the pictures.
Oh,
you
know? For sure.
It's like,
I mean, and sometimes I feel like it as an art form and it being perishable also is like not like you had to be there, because, you know, some of it's, you know, carries on or like gets repeated, but sometimes it is like, it's like, wow, but that like, you missed it. I don't know. I can't do that again. You know?
It was a moment that happened. And, what is your like creative process like when you're trying to come up with a dish? Do you? I mean, I know that you guys, you folks over at Good Kind like to use obviously a lot of seasonal stuff. A lot of like really kind of focused on sustainable, seasonal things. And so, you know, I feel like that kind of sets your palette or your tools. But how do you approach maybe like making a dessert or something like that?
Cause
you are kind of known for some of your sweet stuff. So,
you know, and that's another thing that is an interesting thing of, coming from a focused place, because I do both sweet and savory, and it's really hard for me to do them both at the same time creatively.
Yeah.
Like I can literally make a caramel and, you know, cut an onion in the night, you know, like a reasonable, like, area, you know, but like being like creating a new dish is definitely like, I get pulled in different directions, and sometimes it's like literally like I'm in a savory mood and I can't make something new. I can make something I know how to make, you know?
Yeah.
But I feel like I learned a while ago, this was probably 20 years ago in Portland, from someone, was that your food needs a sense of place.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes here the seasons, you know, there's not a lot, but I mean, even in the winter here, we have cheese.
Yeah, you know, you can't serve a pile of snow to somebody.
You know, but seasonal, definitely. That sort of things that grow together go together, but in a broader sense of like roses and strawberries and, you know, like sort of a more botanical view of it. Sometimes my inspiration, it's from reading. I like to put a lot in, you know, just like try new things, look at what other people are doing, what kind of combinations of flavors they're doing, or combinations of techniques.
Because somebody in town or elsewhere can, like, I mean, not that they're going to put together the caramel with the onions, but I mean, like, you know, sometimes you'll be at a restaurant and you'll look at a dish and it's like, these things that I'm reading just don't, I can't imagine how that makes sense together. And then you get it and that person has either skillfully done it or maybe not so skillfully done it. Yeah. But like, yeah, it's this, you know, I always feel like is it like an arms race? Like who's going to discover that crazy new like combination that's just going to be like, why did no one think of this before? I don't know. But
yeah, and sometimes it's, you know, like you're reading about other thing, you know, whether it's a savory thing or a booze thing, you know, that like you then you're like, oh wow, they put that in a booze, like caraway booze, you know, and you're just like, oh cool, wait, I can do sweet stuff with caraway. Okay. You know, and like just little things that kind of get in there and you're like, wait a minute. That's citrusy and woodsy and earthy.
I like that example. I often try to derive inspiration for cocktails from food.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you can kind of take cocktails and kind of reverse that process. And it's all the same. We're just talking about like flavors and things like that. But like, I like that, you know, you're ranging out, you're just like kind of soaking it all in and like making it your own thing. And I think that's obviously, like, not to rehash my dinner last night again, but I mean, it's just, it was all the things that I think we just talked about.
Yeah.
Make the awesome vibes of last night's dinner obvious. Like, of course it would happen like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I think that there's just kind of that like intentionality, that kind of openness to ideas. You know, I think that that's something that is really admirable about you. And I mean, Paul's sitting over there too, so I'm not going to exclude him. You guys are both like, I see you at the bar at Voyager with your glasses on and you're like, you know, writing down notes and like coming up with dishes and stuff. And it's like, oh man, that's so cool. Like I love seeing that, that process happen. Yeah. So I'm gonna talk about some news I read. We're gonna skip over the, you know, move on from the good vibes at Good Kind.
I mean, sometimes they call it good times because, you know, that's where most people gravitate.
this is a little story that I pulled from a newspaper called The Washington Post a couple months ago. I'm gonna kind of read through this, and this is a story, a restaurant story. You know, I had mentioned earlier just kind of sometimes the cutthroatiness of servers and front of house people is just a crazy thing to have to work through night after night as an employee somewhere. Not to mention dealing with some crazy guests sometimes. I remember one time I was in the weeds there at Hinterland, and again, I was probably like fourth in line for the computer, and I was just like kind of like sweating because I had too much information in my brain that I had to put down.
Yeah.
And I was just like, this guy, Irie Jim, was in front of me, and I was like, dude, can I just get in there real quick ahead of you. Like, I got to get this stuff in. I got to get it in. And he was like, nope, don't think so. And I was like, come on, dude. And he was like, welcome to the NFL, bub. And I was just like, fuck off.
That whole Irie thing.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. When he was Irie, he was real Irie. Yeah. Anyway, love you, Jim, if you're out there listening.
Miss you.
Ryan Brandt stood next to one of the more than 30 diners she just waited on as the man made an announcement. We are tipping, Grant Wise hollered on, so the entire party could hear, a total of $4,400.
Oh, my gosh.
Cheers erupted from the table. Brandt, the server, 35, buried her face in her hands and sobbed as Wise put his hands on her shoulders. Don't do that. Don't put your hands on her shoulders.
Don't touch her.
Don't touch. Grant, stand down. It was a beautiful moment and one I'll never forget, he said in an online post. The money was to be split between Brant and the other servers who waited on Wise's party. Which it sounds like it was 30 people. It's a big group. I'm like, no thanks.
Yeah.
I'm really like but anyway. Ryan Brandt and some other servers did a good job, looks like. The money was to be split between Brandt and the other servers, but what was supposed to be a kind, life-boosting gesture after the December 2nd dinner has dissolved into a nightmare for Brandt and a public relations firestorm for Oven and Tap.
Oh, my gosh.
The Bentonville, Arkansas restaurant with the most generic name that's ever been invented.
Yes, exactly.
Where Brandt worked for 3.5 years. 12 days later, Brandt is no longer an employee there. And her former workplace has been forced to defend itself after firing her. All of it started with Wise's desire to dine with some of his clients at one of his favorite local restaurants while helping someone with a grand gesture. You know, it's like the holiday time.
Oh, summer, sure.
You know. Wise, president and co-founder of a company that helps real estate agents effectively advertise on Facebook, had enjoyed his meals at Oven and Tap, in no small part because of Brandt, who'd waited on him. He and his wife wanted to share their experience with some of his clients, so they chose the restaurant for a seating of the $100 dinner club.
Okay.
Whose participants agreed to each tip $100 at establishments across town. That's pretty tight. Others who didn't eat at Oven and Tap that night added to the tip with donations.
Oh, wow.
So it's like piling on at this point.
Yep.
I guess that's why it would have been $3,000, but then
yeah,
more people added on. We love the food and we love the atmosphere, Wise wrote online. Our clients felt the exact same way after dinner was over. Wise said he called Oven and Tap before the meal to request Brandt as one of the night's servers and to ensure his plan wouldn't run afoul of the restaurant's tipping policy.
Oh,
way to be, Grant. After getting the tip, however, $4,400, Brandt said her manager told her that she and the other servers who worked the party couldn't keep all of it.
Oh, my God.
Instead, they would have to split it among the bartenders, cooks, and food runners, something that had never happened before, Brandt said. Normally, 7% of a server's food and bev sales at Oven and Tap are automatically deducted from their paychecks to pay those people, while tips are left untouched, her lawyer, Bill Horton, told the Washington Post. Still, Brandt turned over her tip. Then she reached out to Grant Wise to thank him for his generosity, while subtly explaining that she hadn't gotten to keep the full tip. Dissatisfied with that, Wise went to the owners to ask that they return the money, saying he and his fellow diners intended to only tip the servers who'd waited on them. Horton and Wise then gave Brandt and the other servers the money directly. Brandt walked away with $2,200, according to the restaurant. So there were two servers?
Okay.
I guess, I'm assuming?
Yeah.
Oven and Tap co-owner Molly Mullis denied to the local radio station that Wise asked about the restaurant's tipping policy in advance.
Oh, shit.
So she's like, he didn't check with us first. Through a spokesperson, the owners told the Post that the restaurant normally takes a cut of servers' credit card tips to divvy among the other employees, but servers get to keep cash tips in their entirety. For large parties, the restaurant decides how to handle tips on a case-by-case basis. When Wise requested his tip go to just the servers, the owners immediately honored that request, as they have an absolute right to tip whoever they want. And Oven & Tap later paid the other employees who worked that night a total of about $7,000. I don't know why.
What?
Here. She says, Molly Mullis says, because we feel that the entire staff worked so hard that night to serve a large party of 32 people. On December 7th, a date which will live in infamy, the owners told Brandt they were firing her because she told Wise how his party's tip was being distributed. Oh!
Oh,
Merry
my gosh.
Christmas, Ryan. The owners have declined to comment publicly about why. Well, I think we know why. They're threatening to sue this server in a cease and desist letter. Now people who have never been to the restaurant have left countless unwarranted one-star reviews, an outpouring of negative reviews, which will undoubtedly impact the business. This is insane.
Yes.
Like, shots fired over and over and over again.
Exactly.
Like, now there's a GoFundMe campaign to raise money so that Ryan Brandt, who got $2,200 but lost her job, could afford to pay rent and buy food while she was unemployed. Within days, the fundraiser exceeded its goal by raising more than $8,700.
Oh my gosh.
As the campaign was raising money, Brandt got good news, Wise said. She'd gotten a job as a server at another restaurant. Her first shift was last week. Wow.
Yeah.
I don't know what... First off, like, you know what? If you pick out somebody that needs some help, cool.
Yeah.
Just cut them a check.
Yeah.
I think. Like, don't go into their job and make a big scene about it.
Right.
You know, maybe be like afterwards, you know, I'm not saying wait out in the parking lot for her or anything, because you already put your hands on her shoulders like a creep. But like, you know, like figure it out in a way that you say, hey, you know, what's your Venmo or something? And,
right.
You know, that way, like, you don't like.
Well, and I've seen this happen.
Really?
Yep.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Over the years, we'll just say even just at Good Kind, like somebody picked up the check presenter and there was like $500 in cash shoved in there. And they were like, immediately, A, tears, B, did this mistake?
Right.
How do I call them? Like,
this
you
is
know,
Wisconsin.
But
I must not believe this is true. It was a mistake. I'm not worthy. Where
or
is this
like,
person?
I feel like some, or they were like, they were in such shock that they hid it for a while. Didn't you don't want to tell everyone.
Yeah.
Because then everyone's like, honestly, where is my cut? You know?
Yeah.
But like, also at the end of the day, you know, sometimes people are just trying to be really, really nice. And like
$500 is obviously, that's a week changing, it's a month changing tip.
Oh yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's amazing. And I'm not discounting it.
No.
$4,000.
Yeah. But then recently I experienced this, like, they call it big tip energy and they make these reservations and everyone who's coming is planning on maybe bringing up to $100 as a tip. I think 100's the expected thing.
Yeah.
But it was a big table and it was like, again, someone's like in tears and shock, just like, you know, and also.
By the way, I'll be serving tables at Perkins next week if anyone's out there listening to this.
You know, but yeah, I don't know. It's like, so, but it's weird because it's like making someone a charity, but then it's not like it's a tip. And like, I don't know. I think there's some interesting layers there.
There's definitely layers. And I think, like, you know, there's a few different things that could happen. If I was the server and this happened to me,
yeah,
what would I do? And I thought about this, and it's like, well, okay, so it has to get split with the other server at the table.
Sure.
So you each get $2,200, which is amazing, especially for Arkansas. That is like that's like 50 grand in Arkansas. sorry to any Arkansas fans out there that we have, which is probably zero. But, you know, I think at that point the two servers have to get together and say, okay, we're tipping out everybody like real nice tonight. You know,
sure.
If I'm walking out of there with $1,600, you know, and I give a hundo to the food runner, I give, you know, a hundo to the, you know, grill cook or whatever.
Yeah.
I give a hundo to the host, whoever's around. They could each give out $500 and still have a really fat stack to take home. I think that's probably the best play.
Sure.
I don't know anything about this person. Maybe they picked her because she's really down on her luck and really, really needs the help.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like they specifically requested her for the table.
Yeah.
So maybe they knew something that, you know, maybe she had just had a kid or like just had been in a car accident or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's even like at the restaurant, we have the buy a round of drinks for the staff.
Yeah.
And so it's like a button and, you know, it's, you know, and then, but then they'll sometimes the guests are like, where are their drinks? Like during service, like they want to see this action going to the kitchen and like everyone doing shots or something. And I'm
No, Zirkle just converted it all to whiskey shots and he's doing just fine. Thank you very much.
But it's also like, well, no, but also not right now.
Yeah, we're at work. We're still at work.
We have to cook other people's food still.
Yeah, seriously. Chill out. Like, they'll get it. Don't worry. It was a drink, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. I think it brings up a lot of interesting dynamics of tip sharing and all that stuff. And I know since COVID, there's been kind of a rethink on a lot of restaurants' parts to, you know, on doing this. And I think it's good. When we had gotten together last time in the aforementioned episode that never was, I think we had kind of touched on this topic a little bit. Like front of house, back of house, either like who's better or who's shittier at, you know, everything. And it's like the dumbest conversation to have because you can't have happy guests without both sides and being their best.
And, you know, working in the kitchen and sometimes hearing what the average amount of tip money that it could be received on a busy night, you're just like, wait, what?
Excuse me?
But I guess mine's just distributed evenly over all of these hours I work.
Yeah, exactly.
You can achieve something similar to that by working overtime, which is burning people into the ground.
It also takes a certain amount of grace on a server's part to not be like talking about that stuff in front of people who make an hourly wage and have been there much longer that day, are subjected to varying amounts of fire and sharp knives and F-bombs and whatever.
And it's just an interesting thing that I think we've seen some places have changed it, or like Europe has never really been that so, you know, and, you know, I don't know. I think it's going to take a different course at some point. It's just not going to happen.
I think one of the main issues behind all of these other issues isn't really the money getting distributed by management or whoever else. It's the fact, I think, that in America, we can't have servers getting paid a living wage because at that point, it would be too expensive for Americans to eat the quantity of food that they want to eat for that amount of money.
The actual number they don't want to talk about is how expensive it is to eat out.
Right.
You know? So it's weirdly just like they choose how much and, you know, we try not to charge too much, but then their margins are just so tight that it's just like, whoa.
Yeah. It's the most insane balancing act. And it happens night after night after night. Like Walmart can set a price on something. It doesn't even really matter because they can set it lower than anyone else, but they can just walk away and then put something on sale. But like, it doesn't work like that with food because, like it's just a nightly thing. Like, what do people want? What is someone willing to pay for this piece of fish or this steak or, you know, these mushrooms? And it's like, you got to ride that. You got to hang 10 on that surfboard and like, you know, just knock it out of the park. And I think it's an American problem.
Yeah. I feel like it's even like little things like when people want to bring a birthday cake and then you charge a cake cutting fee and then they're like, just give me a knife. And I'm like, but we still have to wash the dishes that you eat it off of. And like,
you just made it so that these 10 people didn't order our desserts that we already
exactly.
make.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
it's like a corkage for a cake.
Yeah.
You know, it's a cakeage fee. I just coined that. It's documented
corkage
on the show.
And cakeage.
You can use cakeage fee. I won't be mad. I just need a steady supply of that stout cake or that boss cake. Because the females in my household are like ravenous beasts when one of those things wanders through the door, as I witnessed earlier today.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah, the magic is real. There's a spell in there or something. Lisa, we've been sipping on some juice here. You know, I picked this up on my way over here. First off, I just love driving through the parkway in Humboldt Park to get anywhere. I try to drive through the park as often as I can. And it was great. Today is like the first day of false spring here in Milwaukee.
Oh, yeah.
It's been like mid-40s today. It's a mirage. Like, it's going to be 20 in a couple days and, you know, whatever, but...
And that sunset was, like, pink and purple. I was like, sunset. Is there going to be unicorns coming out?
Dude, it was a golden hour like no other. I parked my car outside the house here, and I could literally, like, smell the trees.
Yes.
And, like, smell the earth. And, you know, it'll be a couple more months before we can actually, you know, celebrate real spring. But, yeah, we are sipping on, I drove here after stopping at Voyager to pick up this wine, and I was driving with two wine glasses in my right hand, casually strolling through the park in my car, feeling like I'm living my best life somehow. And this is a wine that I picked out because the kind of like more... entry-level tier of this wine is on our glass pour list currently at Voyager. This is a Riesling that we have here. It's a 2016 Riesling. It's dry. From Nahe. I don't know if my German is like so bad. But the producer here is Schaefer Froelich, and this is the Wolkengestein. Yeah, Klaus. awesome Scheiße, Achtung baby. This is beautiful.
It's so pretty.
I'm gonna take a little moment because it's finally kind of warming up nicely in the glass. This has a lot of classic dry Riesling notes on the nose. This is a wild ferment. So there is a little bit of like cool, funky, smoky, almost like savory kind of.
Yeah.
It doesn't taste savory, but like you had mentioned kind of like cheese before. I feel
for sure.
Cheese rind is definitely.
I feel like it's also, I don't want, I'm not, you know, not saying something soapy, but like Irish Spring.
Yes.
There's some floral or little citrus layer that is just like,
it's, no, you're right. It's definitely, it's like, lavendery, like eucalyptus-y almost.
Oh yeah.
You know, everybody's got those eucalyptus bushels in their showers these days. It's like, it's kind of like that. It's like, it's refreshingly floral and like,
yeah.
But a little bit of funky, a little smoky. This is from some of the younger vines at Schaefer Froelich. They're about 35 years old. This is from Robert Parker, my best bud. Opens with a very fine, tangy, spicy perfume.
Yep.
With vegetal and discreet fruit aromas intertwined with flinty, stony notes.
Discreet fruit.
Discreet fruit. this fruit isn't going to put its hands on your shoulders after it tips you $4,000. Fascinating, he says. Fresh and piquant on the palate with good fruit intensity and delicate minerality. Yeah, this is really... really delicious.
Yeah, it's really gorgeous and just sort of like
there's like definitely some like peachy fruit, peach blossom thing in here too. It was pretty cold when it arrived here, and I think it's kind of revealing its subtleties.
When you said vegetal too, I was like, wait, what? And I was like, oh, maybe like green almond vegetal, which is also an interesting fuzzy food.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because it's, and I think part of it is like the dryness of the wine keeps a lot of those like bigger like fruit and vegetal kind of flavor profiles a little in check almost. Like it's like very... restrained, and like you get each note in succession. Like it's like
it's kind of, is linear a fair word for this one?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is German engineering at its finest.
It is. It is. Some what do they call it? Farfignugen?
Yeah. Schnugelhausen Flauten. I should My German ancestors are rolling in their graves right now, probably. They're like, wow, this, like, this is what we made, this guy.
And Riesling, poor Riesling, especially in this state, this town, is just like, oh, people are like, oh, I don't like sweet wine.
Yeah,
and I'm like, no, neither do I. But I do appreciate all of the levels of Riesling and their moments and the reasons they're made like that because of this grape. But also, like, this is the sexiest food wine there is.
It's, as far as white wines go, you can find a perfect Riesling for almost any type of food pairing.
Oh my gosh. This makes me want asparagus in spring.
Yeah, I know. I was like, just, I was, as you were talking, I was paying attention, I promise. But I was also, like, some of these vegetal flavors and, like, aromas are just, like, reminding me. And, like, I think pulling up outside and... on this false spring day, I was just thinking about ramps and about like mushrooms and just springtime, like
things just pushing out of the ground.
Pushing out of the ground. Oh. Yeah. That usually happens like in June here at this point.
I mean,
yeah, this is very, I mean, this is a wine that you can definitely enjoy year round. And with dishes as probably ranging as, you know, some like more springtime, things like asparagus and like some salmon and stuff like that, all the way up to like spicier Asian food.
Oh, absolutely.
Indian food would be great with this too.
Mm-hmm.
It's just Riesling is like the MacGyver of wines. Like
you can
solve any problem with a Riesling.
I want like some herby, like mushroom and cheese thing. I don't know. I mean, or like, I guess with cheese in general, it would be really cool.
Yeah. I didn't bring a cheese today, 'cause I was already running late, but, I mean, dude, come by the shop and try out the glass pour version of this. I talked to Matt about this particular, the Wolkenstein, the one that we're tasting right now. And as much as we like this one, this is something we sell, I think, for $34 retail. It's entry level. Little brother is on our glass pour list, and he said it's just as good. It's like, this producer is a good producer, and that's the thing with Riesling. If you find a good producer, all their styles of Riesling, from dry to, you know, sweeter, are gonna tend to be go-to bottles for the application that you need. In that way, I feel like Riesling is misunderstood, especially here. Maybe not everywhere else, but we are a little late to the game here on the upper third coast kind of vibe sometimes. But white wine in general seems to be something that a lot of people, especially like maybe like older folks here, like my parents' age, like they don't understand why anyone would drink a white wine. I'm not saying my parents are like that, but it's just a lot of people. I don't even know if they listen to this show, to be honest with you. But like, you know, there's just a lot of misconceptions, like, oh, I can't drink a white wine in the wintertime or whatever. And it's okay, like, it's like, dude, shut up. Exactly. Like, seriously, like, do you want to taste tropical fruit in the middle of winter? I do. Like, right? People go to Puerto Rico in winter. You can have a glass of white wine.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of thing, just a lot cheaper.
Oh, absolutely. And there's so many, it has so many layers and the spicy nuances, or it goes with spicy food, or like, it, you know, there's so many layers. I mean, even a good Riesling that's supposed to be sweeter still has acidity.
Yeah.
It still has these amazing moments, but you're also like, wow, there's a little like golden raisin and apricots, which I die over those things.
Yeah. It's like the minerals, if you could drink are on point. A sunbeam.
Yep.
You know, like some of those like Spätlese's are like that, where it's just like, wow, this is so rich and like round and orchard fruity, but also it has like that like lightning bolt backbone to it, right? Still.
And just, you just don't want Riesling out of a blue bottle.
Yeah, avoid the blue bottles. Don't be afraid of a screw cap. The Germans are all about the screw cap game, and it makes sense because there's no corkage with a screw cap. So there's no cakeage either, for that matter. if you have questions on Riesling, come into the store anytime. I'm happy to keep espousing its benefits. Guthrie is even more of a Riesling
head.
You know, head, Riesling head. That's what I'm going to call him. You Riesling head. it's a grape that, man, if you're into culinary stuff, if you're into cooking, if you're into cuisines, and you like acidity, get a Riesling. Try it out. Like, it's a whole world of wine that is waiting there for you to explore. Some other things that people have misconceptions about, Lisa, and I know that you are maybe, in my mind, the one of the more ardent connoisseurs, I'll say, of is rosé.
Oh, yeah.
And I know that I've poured you lots of rosé. I've enjoyed lots of rosé in your company. And again, that's another thing where, you know, if you find a good producer who makes a rosé, it's going to be good this year. It's going to be good to drink next year.
Oh, that's like, such a cool thing too. You know?
This is the thing that, and I see this as a wine buyer, as I'm sure you do too, with vendors. They're like, hey, you got to pre-buy the rosés for this spring because they're coming out.
I know. And it's like January, and they're like, you want to talk about rosé? And I'm like, I do. I want a rosé to pour right now with winter food. And they're like, but what do you want to buy that like next year, basically, like this year? And I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah. It's like there's this preconception among maybe consumers. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think maybe it's just among the like importers that, you know, you can only drink a rosé if its current vintage is like, you know.
So that, yeah, like you, people think that it should be fresh and that it's going to run out.
Right.
Some might run out, but there's a lot of rosés out there still.
So many rosés. And what we've been seeing here in our market, even, is that the rosés that were supposed to come in last year in, you know, February, March, April, all of that, like, shipping debacle thing was happening.
Yeah.
And the tariffs were still happening. And COVID was still is happening. and I pre-ordered some rosés that I thought would run out. And I bought some fancier stuff because I thought, well, you know, like, people are coming back out. There's, like, patio season is going to be a little longer this year because people are just going to hang on.
Oh, yeah.
To
just
all of
layer
it.
Up.
Yeah. And, you know, so I was getting some, like Provence rosés. And I was getting some, like Rhone rosés and some, like, Italian stuff that was, like, okay, this is, like, you know, going to be my summer to fall transition rosé.
Oh, right.
And those are fine landing, but the spring and summer rosés didn't land until, like, September. and now all these vendors are like, holy shit, like there's just going to be this backlog, this glut of rosé.
Right.
So I'm saying, like, can we just make it okay to, like, buy the rosé that is the best or that we like the most? And if it's 2 years old, cool. If it's 3 years old, awesome. If it's 4 years old, I'll still drink it. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, it's a wine like anything else. And if it's made by a good producer, it's going to be good wine.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hang up is here.
Yeah. And, you know, you don't have to drink your white or your rosé freezing cold. And so let it warm up. Let it hang out.
Like, it's we're doing with this one here. I think this is blossomed immensely,
right?
since we started talking. So,
and I think rosé, you know, it's still applicable with winter food. It's,
yeah.
Or like while you're cooking dinner and you're snacking and you're having cheese plate and it's,
yeah.
You know, it's, you know, everyone who knows me knows I love rosé.
yeah.
It's even an interesting thing when I go somewhere and I ask, sometimes rosé is not even on the wine list. And or
yeah.
I ask about the rosé. They write on the menu, ask about the rosé. And you ask, and the first question is, did you want still or sparkling? And I'm just like, well, if I wanted sparkling rosé, I would order the one that's on the menu.
Yeah. I can read, man.
But I just, yeah, I feel like it's still like kind of in this, like, it gets parked in the back for, you know, half the year, and it trended really hard for a bit.
Yeah. And I think maybe it's like there's a bit of a backlash sometimes when things happen like that. I think orange wine is going to have that moment at some point. You know,
Pat Nat.
Yeah.
Know, they're all sort of.
Or maybe we're just living in a post grape world, you know, where none of that really matters anymore. Like, people can mix fashion stuff. Like, people will mix, like, you know, 90s fashion with, like, 80s stuff all the time.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter anymore. It's like, okay, well, you're just, you know, you probably listen to this band and that person and, you know, whatever. But, like, it used to be like, no, like, when you're in the 90s, you'd always, like, go thrifting and get stuff from the 60s and 70s. And,
exactly.
You know? But, like, maybe we can just all live in a post-grape world where we're free to drink whatever we want, whenever we want.
Whenever.
I think that sounds good. That's my message. I'm sticking to it. Vote for me when I don't know what I'm going to do. Don't vote for me. I guess we should probably veer off. We're going a little long because it's me. It's my fault. Sorry. I did want to just talk to you briefly about some upcoming cool things that are actually happening again now that, you know, COVID is like winding-ish down to something. I mean, I don't want to say that. It sounds like I'm a denier, but like a lot of us can be vaxxed and boosted at this point and do things in public in a relatively safe way, such as going to cool like wine tastings and like I don't want to say conferences because like showcases,
right?
Something like that.
Yeah.
There's a couple coming up in Chicago this spring that over the years, several of us in Milwaukee, chefs, bartenders, wine buyers, wine reps, we tend to get really excited about. The first one coming up is called Tre Bicchieri, and this is down somewhere in like the... Is it in the West Loop in Chicago?
I think so.
I forget where it is necessarily, but it's all Italian stuff. If you're into Italian wine, it's kind of insane. There's something like 300 different wines to try.
Oh my gosh, maybe yeah. More. Maybe so many.
It's crazy.
It's huge. And huge, not, you know... Not like car show huge. I don't know why that came out of my mouth. Yeah.
But it's not car show huge. But
it's a pretty, you know, I think the last time we went too was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
In February. And it was my first time to Tre Bicchieri, but it was a really great trip. And I learned a lot because there's a lot of little tiny regions and like grapes of, you know, that are really close to other countries that are similar to other things that is
right.
So cool. But then it was like, oh, this thing is happening in Italy. And we were just in a room full of Italians spitting wine.
Yeah, cool. It was like, so where in Northern Italy are you from again? when did you land in Chicago? At the time that we went down to the last Tre Bicchieri show,
it was before everything.
It was like, I think literally maybe 6 days before all the restaurants shut down here.
And like, we had no idea what this all was meant.
Yeah. It was like, okay, this seems a little like serious in Italy. It had like just kind of hit Northern Italy at that point. I remember us kind of being up in the big room with everyone and just like being like, you know, I think we're like kind of playing with fire here. So there was like this kind of like this is maybe not the smartest idea, but you know, we did get to try a lot of cool Italian wine, and no one got COVID in our group anyway. That night or after that, I like was walking to a restaurant with my spouse, and I like heard this woman screaming down a side street like she was being attacked or something, and I was buzzed up enough that I was like, I'm gonna go over there, I'm gonna like, I don't know what I'm gonna do, but I'm gonna do what needs to be done. And sure enough, there's like this dude, like, you know, I don't know what was going on. It was really dark. They were like kind of off in like a little alcove area, and I was like, hey, like, what are you doing, like, what's going on? And like, this guy was like, mind your own business. I was like, sir, you need to blah, blah, blah. Like, get away from her. And he was like, you know, fuck you. And I was like, no, fuck you. Like, and then this girl was like, it's fine. He's just my stupid dad.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, oh. Like, I thought someone was being attacked over here. Like, you guys got to figure this out, man. So that's one of my last kind of memories of the night. But the show itself is really great. It's a lot of fun. We're gonna go down this year. I think you guys are going with.
Yep.
Usually the train from Milwaukee to Chicago on Tre Bic days is like full of a bunch of people drinking wine out of like coffee you know, canisters and stuff. And or coffee thermoses, not canisters. That'd be weird. But yeah, it gets a little rowdy. And people are popping sparkling wine at 8 a.m. on the train to go down for the show. And it's a good time. There's
kind
also
of like a little wine vacation.
It's a mini wine vacation.
You're doing research. You're making connections. And like, you know, for this year, we're also getting out of town. I'm traveling to Chicago. I'm going to stay over and eat other people's food.
Yeah. Are you guys staying the night?
I think so.
Yeah. I'm debating on what's going to happen.
I guess it gets done early enough. You could still like grab dinner and get the 8 o'clock train.
It's a little bit of a rush to do that sometimes, yeah. I think. But plus, I feel like if I'm down there, I want to go to like two places.
Yeah.
If I can. I don't know.
I know. My list is already growing in my head of new things to try or things I miss. And
there's always something new going on. I really want to get down to Andros's Taverna.
Oh, yeah.
Real bad. But
and then Third Coast Swaff in
Third Coast March. Swaff comes up in March.
And that's like real geeky natural wine. Like my head ends up exploding, tasting something that's just so insane. I can't even believe I got to try it.
That one's really fun too. You again, it's like it's a big crammed room of dorks spitting juice into buckets. But the cool thing about Swaff is that, you know, it's not just relegated to Italian stuff. You get wines from all over the world. You know, we had to try a couple different, maybe like 3 or 4 different Mexican producers last time we were down there that were really great. And the cool thing about, like, if you have a job like Lisa or myself where you buy wines for a place, you can meet up with some of your salespeople at that event or take notes. And, like, I mean, I've had situations where, you know, I've gone to Justin Spaller from Chromatic after a swap and been like, dude, can you really try to get some of, you know, wine XYZ up to Milwaukee? Because, like, that shit was amazing.
Yeah.
And sometimes he can and sometimes he can't. But, like, it's nice to be able to have the say for all of you people out there going to our bars and restaurants to be like, you know what? I actually, like, met the person who makes this wine and, like, pulled a couple strings to get a few cases up here for all of us to try.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's really fun when you can kind of like find one of those little unicorns.
Right.
But those are coming up. We'll probably do a full show on Trey Bick because I'm a huge Italian food and wine dork, and I don't know. I will probably make a really, really long episode about it, like I'm doing right now. So, been lovely to have you. We're gonna polish this Riesling off. Bye bye.
Peace out.